Hello, everyone, and welcome to So What Happens Next, Small Screens. It's our first Small Screens of the new year, 2021, and we are kicking it off with a movie that looks like it came out almost exactly 20 years ago now. It's Spy Kids.
Kicking off 9 days into the year of 2021, and it's looking exactly the same.
Doesn't anyone notice this? I feel like I'm taking crazy pills!
Yes, I totally hear you on that. It has been a roller coaster of a year, and it's barely been a week. But, you know, you guys obviously have probably seen tons of the news, and you know what's up, so there's no sense in diving into, you know, some bad stuff when we can, you know, take a nostalgia-fueled trip back to something that is just demonstrably good. I am talking about Spy Kids, the Spy Kids franchise, at least the first three movies, starting with Spy Kids in 2001. Amber, how did you feel when you found out this movie is, like, gonna celebrate its 20th anniversary this year?
Made me feel old, that's for sure.
Oh my god, like,
like, I remember going to the movie theater and seeing this movie.
I remember thinking this movie was the shit when I was a kid. Like, I remember going and thinking it was fuck. I was definitely part of that whole, like, craze, because this movie was like a runaway hit. I mean, this movie, the second one, and the third one all come out 1 year after the other. Like, they were just churning these fucking things out.
Not to mention all the Spy Kids gear that came out.
Oh, man,
that
the McDonald's toys. Yeah. All of it. Oh, my God. It was such, like, it was huge, just like. And by all rights, I don't know why. Like, I mean, as far as movies go, it's just like this random movie of kids being, maybe it's because we're in the future and I'm so used to everything being franchises and, like, based on something. But this movie comes out of nowhere and it's just like, it's a movie about little spies and, like, here you go. And it's cheesy as fuck, but let's just dive into this one. So we are talking here, just to clarify, we're talking about Spy Kids 2001, Spy Kids 2, Island of Lost Dreams, 2002, and Spy Kids 3D Game Over in 2003, all of which were directed and written by one Robert Rodriguez, who has a pretty wild, like, you know, repertoire of films under his belt. He's done stuff like From Dusk Till Dawn with Quentin Tarantino and George Clooney. If you haven't seen that, that's a fantastic film. He's done the Machete movies. He's done Alita Battle Angel, too. It's probably one of the more recent ones that's come out that he's directed. And it's just, there's just like a Rodriguez touch to these films that it's just there in Spy Kids.
Yeah, it's like he took all of the, like, especially with the logos and stuff, like having it be like 3D and like popping out. I can remember doing that on like Word documents when we were first able to use computers, like on the, you know, Apple, big ass Apple computers. But I'm just like, I feel like he's just the guy. He's like, holy shit, that looks cool. Let me put it in every freaking, he's like that kid with the PowerPoint. Right. Let me use all of the effects on every slide. You know, it's going to take an exorbitant amount of time to do it. And it's just like, at the end of it, it's like super cheesy, but yet you still like it.
I know. It's like, you're, that's a great way to put it. It's like, this movie especially is like, it's that kid who was really good at PowerPoint and like no one else does it that way. He's doing like star wipes and sound effects and text flying in from every direction and like zoom in, zoom out, like all these crazy little things. And all, everyone's like, wow, this PowerPoint's amazing. But like, I don't know, it's kind of a lot. And, but with him, it's just like, this stuff is crazy. And, you know, I was trying to watch these movies on our, like, rewatch we were doing for this episode here, like, kind of out without the nostalgia lens on, right? Like, I'm like, I don't want to watch these movies. Like, oh, yeah, Little Kid Thomas loved these. Like, they must be good. Because arguably, they're like really fucking strange movies that on their own probably wouldn't be that great. Like if someone came up to me and they're like, it's kids, their parents are spies, and like they learn the truth and become spies. And I'm like, it's kind of dumb. And it's like, you think it would be more suited towards like, aimed at a very specific like children audience. Like you think this movie is going to be a hardcore children movie, mm-hmm. but it's arguably not quite a kids movie. Like it's almost like a kids, it's like a kids movie, a kids action movie, but like an adult like satirical comedy. Like yeah. it's so like this first one especially, like we finished the first one I think this morning, and it was just like the villains and then the like explanation for the plot. I'm like, this is so like James Bondian, but like yeah it, you know, it's given this like Hispanic kind of flair to it. Like Rodriguez is like, okay, you know, the characters are speaking Spanish, they are it, the guitar, the music, like everything that's designed this movie is so like meant to kind of flip like, oh, it's not a British, you know, spy film like James Bond, we're doing something different.
It's not like Kingsman.
Right. It's like this whole other thing, and it's just it's so weird. So let's start with the first movie here. Spy Kids 1, 2001. I can't believe this movie's 20 years old. It's kind of freaking me out a little bit, but you know what? I'm going to temper that later. This movie's essentially about two kids, Carmen and Juni Cortez, whose parents, Gregorio Cortez and Ingrid Cortez, played by Antonio Banderas and Carla Gugino, are spies. And they like haven't told their kids they're spies in any more than like a bedtime story. Like it's obvious to the viewer like they're spies, right? And they get kidnapped on a mission and the kids have to essentially go save them is what ends up happening. And through this you meet, you know, you meet their uncle, who's not their uncle, played by Cheech Marin.
I'm not your uncle.
You have Danny Trejo playing their real uncle, like...
A real uncle? Because we already got a fake uncle.
Gregorio Cortez is my younger brother.
Alan Cumming playing Floop, which is like a children's TV host, which for the life of me, I don't know who the fuck this show is for. Like the show that
they
show them doing.
The show is very like Teletubbies. If Teletubbies was kind of
like
creepy.
If Teletubbies was like, it's quite literally like if Teletubbies was on drugs. Like,
yeah.
The show looks like nothing short of a nightmarish acid trip. Like, thumb people, horrible clown creatures, eyeballs floating around. And Juni loves this show, and, you know, Floop is the villain. Turns out that he actually did create these horrible clown creatures out of OSS agents, the spy organization agents. And he has Tony Shalhoub playing Alexander Minion, you know, little on the nose there, who is, like, the kind of second-in-command but real villain of the movie. Also, spoilers for the Spy Kids films, if you haven't gotten around to it. I mean, it's been 20 years, but, you know, there. And the shock of, like, this whole movie was seeing Robert Patrick as, like, the evil benefactor for the whole thing.
Oh,
yeah. I was just like, holy shit, like, the T-1000 is in this movie. Like, what the fuck? Like... I do not remember him in this film at all, but everybody is clearly having a whole lot of fun just hamming it up. And, I mean... I have mad respect for this. Like, watching it now as an adult, I have a lot of respect for just the effort that clearly went into this. Because whoever did the casting, I mean, these kids were great. Like, I was like, wow.
Yeah,
like
it's very believable that they're siblings.
Like,
and then even,
yeah.
like, the parents, like, of course, like, they were really young at the time. But even then, it's just, like, you totally believe, like, they're a family. And maybe it's because people don't, they didn't take it seriously. So yeah. They're just kind of like, oh, you know, it's just basically a huge thing of like pretend or whatever. Like, this is a movie right. for kids, so.
And I feel like they just nailed the chemistry with everybody. Like, they nailed it, like, on the family level, on the sibling level, and mm-hmm. even, like, when they're interacting with the villains and stuff. Like, if someone came out and was like, Antonio Banderas and Danny Trejo are brothers, and, like, you know, they were hiding it from the world. Would go, you know, I believe this. It turns out that like Floop and Alan Cumming's character and Tony Shalhoub have like built these robot children that are like going to infiltrate everything. And this is where like the plot was totally lost on me as a kid, was this whole third brain thing where they're like, yeah, we invented this like robot intelligence thing that's like super smart or something. They're kind of vague on what the fuck it does. They're just like, it's this brain that's like smart and is like, you know, artificial. It's like mm-hmm. an artificial intelligence, but it's more like a just a straight up artificial brain.
Yeah.
And you program it how you want and it goes off and does whatever. And it was allegedly like destroyed. So that's why they like capture Antonio Banderas and Carla Gugino. And they're like, oh yeah, like Antonio Banderas secretly worked on it and you had no idea. And I'm like, whoa, there's like a whole like drama thing here with the parents that like,
yeah, they do a very good job with that too. Like the plot is actually really easy to follow.
Right. But it's like, also like got enough depth to where it's not just like, I'm evil. Yeah. It's like, no, like Robert Patrick is paying them to make this army of children. So like they'll make money, you know, they're basically like giving weapons to terrorists. And I'm like, this is like a solid plot. Like, as far as an actual thing goes, this isn't just like, I have to stop the bad Floop in his evil, dastardly castle. Like, there's more there than that.
Yeah.
Well, that's not very nice.
Of course not! I'm f***ing evil!
And, you know, the whole thing is they want to get the brain and put it in the robot kids. They're, like, super soldier robots. Because they can, like, oh, this is the president's kid. Mm-hmm. And they can infiltrate and everything. But it's, like, the robots can't speak, they can't do anything.
Yeah,
they're like super strong and they follow orders, but they can't like function in any like mm-hmm. independent capacity. So they want the brain to put in, which, you know, the kids find, and the bad guy gets it, and the robots are all finished or whatever. And yeah, you know, they gotta fight them off, big fight scene at the end, all that stuff. But I gotta say, like, the thing I love the most, which I never thought about at all, was Tony Shalhoub, Monk himself, as like a villain in a movie.
Yeah,
like, he's, you know, like, this movie starts with, like, Floop is, like, the bad guy.
Yeah.
And then you kind of get that he cares more about his number two kids show yep. than the he's actual like, evil show. He's, like, two, and he's, like, number two. Yeah, number two. And, like, that's what he cares about. It's, like, yes, he's creating this, like, he's got holodecks and, like, thumb robots and shit. Which, like,
and,
that.
Like, the gadgets in this film. We didn't have that, like, before, at least in 2001, I don't think. We were still in the BlackBerry phase of shit. Yeah. We have those now.
I know.
And Machete's just like, here's a smartwatch that does everything but tell you time.
Total communication center right there on your wrist. Cell phone, internet access, satellite TV, you name it. That baby will do everything but tell you what time it is.
It doesn't tell time?
No. There was so much stuffed into it, there was no more room for the clock.
Right. There's all kinds of shit in this. And it's like all these, yeah, like fun. It's funny to look at because it's like, oh, you thought that was like super,
yeah,
fun.
And now like a holodeck. Yeah.
Right. Like, now that's something we don't have, which would be mm-hmm. cool. But it was wild. Like, they just have all this stuff and he's inventing robots and like able to biologically transform these agents into horrible clown monster, yeah, people and all this
like,
shit.
Like, of course, the science behind that is kind of just like, no, of course. Like, who cares? Don't even talk, yeah, about it. Yeah.
And I mean, it's not like in Tenet where they're like, we're going to explain it, but don't try to understand it. Just let it be bullshit.
Don't try to understand it. Feel it.
And in this, they're like, I turned them into monster men. And it's like, whatever, man. You got a machine that zaps them and it does it. You're not trying to pretend like this
clay,
is something.
It's
right.
Somehow.
It scans an, yeah, image of what you want them to look like and it makes it happen. And I'm like, whatever, man. Like,
that seems pretty dangerous.
Totally. But, like, think of the reconstructive surgery applications of that. Like, if you fucked up your face and then you just, like, drew or sculpted an old, yeah, picture and you scan it and it's like, bzzz, fridge and then shocks you. That'd be amazing. Yeah, no, I just thought I would just
think. They don't know what they
have.
That. He's just right. like, I'm just using it to.
I'll be evil. It's like, dude, you could make so much money on like just plastic surgery alone.
We were on the verge of greatness. We were this close.
Yeah, this movie's just all over the place in what it is, but it does it all really well. And it kind of freaked me out a little bit how well it did. I was like, I remember this movie being campy as shit, and it totally is, but there's just something about this movie where I'm like, it for what it gives you makes sense. It's like, okay, fine. Yeah. You know, I'm here for it, whatever. Kids are spies, fine, fuck it. But like, you know, I buy it.
I think that the great thing about having a director like Robert Rodriguez is, unlike other directors, besides just really over exaggerating things, I think he really pushes the limit. So yeah. And then he does get better, and that's the great thing about, I think, you know, him as a director, or just seeing like the same director produce more films,
right?
Because if you look at his films now, like, they're a lot better. Well, but they, like, still are like, yeah, with, you know, it's something that he would do. Like, you could see him
there's
doing
a feeling to it. Yeah, that I feel like he,
like,
puts there.
There's,
yeah,
you know, only certain things like he, like, particularly does. Kind of like Christopher Nolan, but again, it's kind of just like, oh, I had my high
right.
with like the Dark Knight series, but now I'm just like,
right, like I don't
trying
feel like
anything
it, yeah.
out, you know,
like I don't feel like I've hit. I mean, I don't feel like I've seen, I guess, like top peak Robert Rodriguez yet, right? Like, I feel like he still could whip
yeah,
out
I
something
think he's
amazing.
Still, like, he's like on the incline, basically.
Yeah, I yeah. mean, I feel like if like he, I feel like there's totally. Like, there's room to grow, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's so, I can only imagine it must be, like, almost nightmarish for someone like Christopher Nolan. And for information, you guys listening, if you didn't listen to our last week's episode, we did Tenet, which is a Christopher Nolan movie. So we're not intentionally trying to shit all over Christopher Nolan much. The man is a phenomenal movie maker. It's just, we didn't care for Tenet that much. Go listen to our last episode for more details on it. But it's also fresh in our minds, so it's easy to make the comparison. But as I was saying,
it's a nightmare.
I can only imagine it must be a nightmare for somebody like that. I mean, and countless other directors are probably like that too, right? Like, Steven Spielberg is another great. Yeah. So it's like, you make some amazing movie. Like, Steven Spielberg makes Schindler's List, right?
Yeah.
And then it's like, what kind of pressure do you got to be sitting on to be like, oh my God, is this got to be like another Jurassic Park, another Schindler's List, another Jaws? Like, and it just, you know, people will go into your movie with like this expectation of like, this movie will be like this yeah. and it'll be fucking amazing. Whereas like with Robert Rodriguez, I get this like, I don't want to call it necessarily consistency because the films do fluctuate, but it's like, I know I'm going to get a certain kind of like feeling. And I think Steven Spielberg and, like you mentioned, Christopher Nolan are kind of this way too. But it's like, this feeling is like, there's a level of like maybe camp here that I'm like, I'm going to be cool with this. And like, it can be stupid, but I'll enjoy it because it's almost like absurd. Like, after watching this series of films, I have a like feeling that Robert Rodriguez is at his heart just like an absurdist director, and it just happened to work really well as like a kid's movie at the time, so nobody paid attention to it. But just like, I think of other movies where I've just seen like trailers for stuff like Machete and things, and it's just like this crazy, violent, over the top, like almost nonsensical thing. Like the beginning of Spy Kids 2, when it's like this crazy, super meta theme park named after his production company, but in the world of the movie, like Troublemaker Theme Park or whatever. And it's like these crazy fucking rides. They're like juggling you while you're inside a capsule, like 100 feet in the air, or smashing things together. And for some reason, Bill Paxton owns it. And it's just like, that is so fucking absurd to me.
Are we all in the movie right now?
We are all in a movie, even when there are no cameras.
Hey, yeah, ooh, it's meta now.
Whereas when I was a kid in 2002 watching it for the first time in theaters, I was like, whoa, that is like the craziest theme park ever. But it wasn't like outside of the realm of reason to me. And I feel like it's just, it weirdly works. Like, it kind of works in that strange sense of like, this is so absurd that you're making me go, I accept it. Like, it's not so stupid. It's just nuts. But your whole world is nuts. So it works, you know?
And I think it helps that he writes everything himself.
Oh, totally.
Versus like, let me have 4 different writers on this, including myself. Oh, I think that's where things go wrong, mm-hmm. to be honest.
Well, you get all that input, you yeah. know? And I mean, especially like Spy Kids 3, I think he gets like 8 credits. he's like director and writer and editor and executive producer. Yeah. And like, I think he's even credited with like special effects or something like that.
Oh, crazy.
And I'm just sort of sitting.
That's a lot of work.
That's a lot, right? Like, that's like, he might as well have just taken the camera and filmed it and then just like went off. And I think he even does have like a cinematography credit on there. I have to double check, but it's kind of like, what, man? Like, you just, it's like you basically didn't have a crew. You were the crew. You had a cast, and yeah. You said, "All right, guys, I'll see you at the premiere and later this year, and we'll talk then." And you just like shut yourself off from the world and worked on this crazy 3D movie.
When Time Magazine called 3D the future of movies, we doubt this is what they had in mind.
I think it also lends itself kind of what you're saying is like, if you have a vision and you're going to like put in all this effort on it, you know, that really lends itself to the feeling I keep talking about with like his movies. Because if there's one movie that I feel like it doesn't come out full blown in, it's Alita Battle Angel.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I remember we watched it for the first time. I didn't realize Robert Rodriguez directed it. And I was like, this movie feels a certain way. Like, this movie feels a certain way. And I liked it. I mean, other people probably didn't. But I mean, I liked Alita Battle Angel. I thought the ending, like, I really hope it gets a sequel just because the ending left a lot to be desired. But at the end, I was like, man, that felt really good. And then I saw, like, his name come up on the screen as directed. And I was like, oh, shit. Because that movie was advertised as, like, James Cameron. Like, constantly was, like, produced by James Cameron. And, like, you can feel that.
Yeah.
Like, there's definitely a Cameron feel to that movie. But, like, there was this other flavor or something. I was like, what is... It would, like, kind of poke its head out every now and then. I'm like, but wait, it's not going full absurdity. So what's up here? And then, you know, I see Rodriguez, and now I'm, like, watching Spy Kids. And then you, like, watch Alita, and you're like, oh, I can see the connectivity here. Like, yeah. I can see the themes here. But in this case, when he's just like, I am, you know, judge, jury, and executioner of this film, and we're going to do it my way because there's no one here to stop me. It's like, oh, okay. And it's nuts. Fucking love it, though. It's like a wild ride.
I have some IMDb trivia that we should most definitely go over after having this whole conversation. So the first one is that Robert Rodriguez edited the movie in his garage. Whoa. But the garage, here's the catcher. The garage is a state-of-the-art, like, editing, like, art editing studio.
You know, I got
a feeling. He calls it his garage, though. But I was just like, that makes sense. Like, you have this state-of-the-art,
right.
Like,
you have it at your studio. House, yeah. Right. I feel like that, like, if you pulled up to his house and you, like, parked in front of his garage and there's just, like, a sign hanging on it that just says Troublemaker Studios, like, on yeah. the garage. And, like, the funky kid is, like...
It's like Silicon Valley when they're just, like, here's, the company logo is on the garage door.
Right. I feel like it's exactly that. Like, it's just you pull up to his house and it's there. And it's like, oh, yeah, welcome to Troublemaker Studios. Anyway, let's go inside my house for, like, some coffee or whatever.
And he brings this serious gourmet shit on us. What flavor is this?
Knock it off, Julie.
What?
I don't need you to tell me how fucking good my coffee is, okay? I'm the one who buys it. I know how good it is. When Bonnie goes shopping, she buys shit. I buy the gourmet expensive stuff because when I drink it, I want to taste it.
It was shot over a period of 10 weeks.
Dang.
That's man, this guy is like, boom, boom, boom.
Right, because I was like, this is like some crazy, like the special effects themselves in this movie are so obviously, like they were obvious then, they're obvious now, like they're not anything that's so like submersive that you're like, oh my God, like I must be looking at the real thing, you know? But it's like, there's a lot of it. And especially in 2001, I can't imagine that took any, like, short amount of time to achieve. You know, like, when they're underwater and shit. I feel like that wasn't exactly easy. Also, the set designs in these movies are kind of wild. Like, I'd love to know where the hell they got this stuff. Like, especially, like, their house is nuts. Like, the house they live in is nuts.
Yeah.
I could believe it exists somewhere. Somebody owns this house somewhere. I could believe that. But, like... when they're on the submarine or like Floop's castle and shit, I'm just kind of sitting there going, man, how quickly did you turn around these sets? Because they don't look like repurposed versions of anything. They're
yeah.
just like absurdly colorful or tiny or like weird shit everywhere for no reason. Like the Floop castle crap is It's like a child nightmare.
Yeah. Like, it is, especially with the floor and just
the
like,
puzzle piece floor. Yeah. And then the chains that they have them in are like weird multicolored Play-Doh looking things. And I'm just like, how long did this take? Like, pre-production of this movie could not have been 10 weeks.
Like, the scenes were pretty much the same. Like, they would go down a hallway to get to like the dungeon, and then they go down the same hallway passing by the same lab or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
So they obviously like reused a lot of stuff, but it was like you said, a different scene. Like, it wasn't just like, oh, here's the same background, same time. Like,
I just mean like it's, they can reuse them, but like the dining hall scenes, right? Like when they're in that
That's
big, that room, like I'm sure there's some CG that went into it. I'm sure it was made to look a little bit different, but like that room is huge.
Like,
and
the
like
food,
really,
there was food.
Yeah, there's like
weird.
All this nasty candy crap. I'm just like, the effort that just went into setting this stuff up is crazy. And maybe it's because it's so cheesy, so you notice it, because again, it's all absurd as hell. So you're like, this is nuts. Like, that's great. Like, how much effort went into these like weird springy plates and shit like that? Like, what is going on here? It's almost like
in 10 weeks, like,
well, that's what I'm saying. It's like 10 weeks maybe to shoot.
Yeah.
But like, how long to build all the shit and like pre-production stuff before you even have the actors on the set to shoot this take? Like, it's wild to me. There's not a whole lot of set going on in these movies.
Yeah.
Well, after
but
the
this
first
one had a lot of different sets, totally. Including outside.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if that was like, but I feel like it was like, San Delfino or whatever.
Yeah, I have no idea if San Delfino is a real place, but
yeah,
they go to like South America at one point. I got a sneaky suspicion they predominantly filmed it in Texas.
Okay.
Just because that's how it looked, especially at the end.
Mm-hmm.
I got the feeling like y'all are in Texas, and I think you guys have been in Texas the whole time. And I think you just told me it was, I really think that they pulled off the classic South America / like Central America thing, where it's like, we're in South America and everything is slightly orange. Like, as a result, like,
yeah.
And then when we're not anymore, it's a little bit like not as orange. It's like, okay, whatever. Like, it's weird as hell, but whatever. The casting for these films is absolutely bonkers.
Yeah, like, I don't know how he convinces them to, but it sounds like he has a lot of people that actually like want to be a part of the movie, because like for this one, I guess Brie Larson was wanting to be play the role of Carmen.
Oh, whoa.
Yeah, and then a bunch of other people from like, one lady from Law and Order wanted to play Carmen's mom.
I mean, you have to also acknowledge, like, at this point, like, Robert Rodriguez has done some movies that have been like big
deals.
That's
true.
So like, people probably saw his name and they were like, ooh, I want to be in that new Robert Rodriguez movie. That's wild.
But even just
though.
Having like Terry Hatcher, who at first I didn't realize that was her, but then I was like, oh, that's her, like because of her voice.
Right.
Like,
I was like, her
Coraline.
Voice is so familiar. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, she's in a bunch. Like, and then you have like Cheech Marin is in this film. Like I said, Robert Patrick is in this film. Danny Trejo's in this film. Like, you know, and everyone else we mentioned earlier, it's just like there's a weird, like, kind of recognizable at the very least cast going on here. Like, if you see these people, you're like, I know who that person is. Like, as a little kid, I had like seen Cheech Marin in other things, and I was like, I know who that guy is. It's just wild, the people that are in this movie. But none, I feel like, is wilder than a reoccurring character on this podcast, Ricardo Montalban. Khan himself plays Carmen and Juni Cortez's grandfather.
No, Juni. I shall leave you as you left me. As you left her. Marooned for all eternity in the center of a dead planet. Buried alive. Buried alive.
But we have to find...
Khan! Khan!
And when we were watching Spy Kids 2 earlier, they couldn't have given him a better reveal without making it too over the top for even this movie. When it's like you get introduced to, they both play Carla Gugino's parents.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like sitting there and you see Holland Taylor standing there and she's like arguing with her husband about how like, you know, she doesn't want them to do this and all this other stuff. And they like storm away, and the whole time there's a man in a chair with his back to the screen, like shadow over his back, and he's just like sitting there quietly, and he just kind of nods, and then it cuts to like, you know, Antonio Banderas and Carla Gugino are like standing there, and they're like, we're gonna go, you know, you guys are great, but we're gonna be fine, these are our kids, we'll take care of it. And she's like, well, I know they're your kids. And then you hear like, yes, I know, but you have not, we have not taught you. And then like this man in a wheelchair like rolls into the, like from the shadows, like comes into the light, and then he's like, but we have not taught you everything that we know. And I'm just like, damn, what a reveal. Like, for no reason. It's just like, they've never built this character up in any way, shape, or form, but it's like, because it's him, because it's like, you'll know who this is, it's just like this dramatic reveal of this man. And he's totally playing it. Like, he's just like,
you don't seem to understand. This isn't you and Gregorio simply saving the world again. This time, we all have much more to lose if you fail. Carmen and you.
And it's like, ooh.
And the cool thing is that he created that character just for him.
Really?
Like being in a wheelchair.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, and it works. Like, I mean, even the little, like, I'm floating in the air with the propellers and whatnot towards the end, all that stuff. But it's just like, it's just so nice to see him. Because I also saw that he's, like, this is first, I think, like, film appearance since the 80s.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think he'd been on.
After he had his accident.
Right. Like, I don't think he'd been in a movie since The Naked Gun. But yeah, so like this was, and he'd been on TV and stuff, but like this was the first time he came in. And I mean, honestly, like, again, it's such a weird thing to say. Spy Kids is such a strange movie. And so for like you guys listening who are like, why are you guys doing Spy Kids? It's like, because watch it again as an adult. I guarantee you, you'll be like, this movie is a whole different experience.
Yeah.
And it's like, just different. Like, it's weird, but it's weird in a way that's, like, not stupid, but just, like, what the fuck? And, of course, it's, like, a runaway hit, so all these actors and actresses are jumping aboard. Also, Bill Paxton's in Spy Kids 2. I think I might have mentioned that already, but he's, like, in the very beginning, and he's just, like, playing the theme park owner, which is, like, a random what the fuck moment. Like, we just watched Aliens the other day, so it was just,
it's
like,
it's so meta. It's, like, Troublemaker Amusement Park.
Yes.
And it's just, like, but it's made but the, by Troublemaker. But the production Studios. Company,
the logo, and that right there would be like my thesis.
Yeah.
It's like Robert Rodriguez is an absurdist director who knows it, and he's just kind of doing meta before, you know, Rick and Morty made it cool or whatever the hell you want to call it. Like, this movie's crazy in just the way it addresses itself.
Yeah.
Shut up, Morty, you brainwashed little turd.
I think it's even so crazy in like the shit, like especially in this one, because they introduce like what they literally call OSS Junior.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like the Spy Kids division of the spies. And I'm like, it's like got like toys and colorful walls. Like, it looks like a fucking like McDonald's play place.
It does.
But it's a serious work environment. Like, it's really strange.
Yeah, like they have employee of the month, but these are kids.
Right. Which, like, really calls into question child labor.
Yeah.
Like,
Junie has his own office, and they have their own assignments. I'm just like, and then the class that they were saying was going on at the time, I forgot, what was it?
Something they're like latent psychic ability children or some shit. And I'm like, what the fuck are we doing with this? Like, it's absolutely nuts. One of the things that happens is that Junie gets fired because he kind of gets, like, improperly blamed for losing this device to the bad guys. So they fire him.
Which, I'm kind of just like, where would he go to school?
Well, so here's the thing. He doesn't talk about like, man, I don't know what I'm going to do with my life anymore. He's like, straight up, there's a line where he's like, well, you know, I guess it won't be so bad to be retired. Like, I can finally pick up all the hobbies I used to have. And I'm over here like, motherfucker, you're going to retire. You're like 10? Like,
retired?
How much does this place pay you? What is that?
Probably way too much.
And you got fired. Like, you're fired.
Well, it wasn't like a big, like, it's not like he killed someone. It's just he kind of.
Yeah, but I mean, like, are they paying him off?
Yeah, I think they gave him a severance package.
Okay. I'm like, what is that?
So,
if this kid is able to be like, oh man, I guess I can look forward to retirement, and he got like this crazy severance package in order to retire
like
at 10?
With his retirement account. Or,
it's fucking nuts.
I know. Within a year.
Right. Within 1 year of working as a legit spy. he can retire.
Got me a future, partner. I'm 2 days away from retirement. My daughter's graduating from college.
Little Susie's growing up.
And as soon as we nail Mendoza, my old lady and I are going to sail around the world like we always wanted. We just christened a boat.
But anyway, they have to go to this island to track down this device from the bad guys and get it back. And, you know, the family comes along the way and the rivals catch up. I mean, the movie, it's a standard, like, these movies are, with the exception of the third one, I guess, the first two are really kind of solid spy films. Like, they got all the pieces, right? Like, you have the bad guy in the first one who's, like, trying to make the weapon that will destroy the world, right? And, you know, he gets double-crossed by the really bad guy who's going to use the weapon. All the while, like, one of the main characters was kind of the reason the weapon exists in the first place, you know? Two is, like, the same thing, but with, like, different character motives. Like, you have kind of the characters coming into their own and figuring out, like, how to operate on alone, like, proving themselves. And at the same time, you have, like, the character, Steve Buscemi, who made the device, who has no idea it's being used for evil. And it's just, you know, it's a spy movie. Like, you could put this, a similar plot elements in James Bond, and they already have been. And it's like, I got a thing that will destroy the planet. You have to stop it. Whatever. Three, though. This is, I think, where it really should have ended. I mean, I think it should have ended after two.
Yeah. I think three was just...
Three is the weakest. The three is the weakest.
Yeah, it is. And yeah. I mean, with the quality of it, it's also probably the poorest.
For sure. But the cast is like the final achievement of this whole thing. Like...
Yeah, because you bring everybody together at the end, and then that's it. You bring
everyone from the last movies, and then you have
cameos.
Selma Hayek in this film, Sylvester Stallone in this film. Like, you're kind of just stacking more people in. Even Elijah Wood comes in. Like, mm-hmm. And this movie is, like, right after Lord of the Rings. So, like, Elijah Wood is, like, Elijah Wood. And I read online that, like, they planned his stuff for this film before all of that really kicked off. I guess he had been in a previous Robert Rodriguez film.
Okay.
And so he was like, oh yeah, I'd love to get Elijah Wood to come like into this movie and like cameo in it. And then like Lord of the Rings got super huge and it was just like, oh, well, I guess this is a thing now. And like, so he's in it for like a hot second.
Yeah.
But the third one is kind of weird. Like Spy Kids 2, Junie decides to go freelance.
I'm out.
And like quit the OSS, yeah. Which I feel like is not okay. Like, if a CIA agent was like, I'm going to quit the CIA and go be a spy for whoever will pay me, I just feel like that doesn't fly. Like, I just feel like that's not okay. In some way, shape, or form, there is like a death clause in your quitting contract that says like if you somehow screw over, you know, the CIA, the OSS, like we will hunt you down. And like this freelance noir detective type is how this movie starts, and it's like he's solving a case for like a young Selena Gomez, like a really young Selena Gomez. It's just some stupid shit about like a water park or something, and he like barely has any money, which makes you kind of wonder like what happened to that retirement you were talking about in the last movie, bro.
Yeah.
But he really wants this video game. And it's like this video game is this crazy VR game. And I guess the whole plot is that like Donegan, for some reason, is not in prison. And his wife, who is Selma Hayek, which like, yeah, okay. Like, okay, bud. They find that this like guy called the Toy Maker, who is played by Sylvester Stallone.
Who are you people?
Rather fantastically, might I add, when we get to him. But he's created this game and it's supposed to like,
it's literally like...
like brainwashes kids' minds or something like that?
No, it like keeps them stuck in the game until they win.
It's the plot of Sword Art Online. Yeah, it's Sword Art Online. Yeah. That's right. I'm like, what did that to? Oh, yeah. That.
Yeah, so he basically goes in and he gets his band of like misfits.
Well, he has to save Carmen who went in before.
Yeah.
And she's trapped in the game.
Yeah.
And like you have to go in and save her, but you have to play the game.
Yeah,
to get there.
Exactly. To get to the end of the game, which right. is impossible. But unless the prof, you're like, you know, the prophesized the dude,
whatever the hell it was, yeah,
who will save everybody, basically. But of course, he falls in love with a freaking robot.
Yeah, he falls in love with like a program. It's very Tron Legacy in that regard, where it's like he falls in love with this program, and it's just like, okay.
Yeah, even I think there's one point where he's just like, I didn't even get her number.
Her email and, address. It's not even yeah, number, it's her, email.
Yeah, her email address.
We are staunchly.
And the grandpa's just like, Junie, don't fall in love with the game.
Right.
Like, the relationship between the toy maker and grandpa.
Holy
he has
shit.
Such good lines in this. Like the grandpa.
Right.
The toy maker is here?
You know him?
I've been hunting him down for 30 years, Junie. You shouldn't have brought me here.
Like, let's just dive into that now. Sylvester Stallone and Montalban, like, that is the spy movie that we never got. And I would fucking love it. Like, the whole plot for him is Junie gets, like, to bring somebody into the game with him. And he chooses his grandpa. And his grandpa comes in and, like, they allow his grandpa, like... His grandpa gets his power boost thing and basically lets him run around, so he's not in a wheelchair anymore.
You can walk.
No, Junie. Oh, I can do more than that.
And it turns out that, like, Montalban was the spy that brought the toy maker down originally, and they all thought the toy maker was, like, gone. But turns out he just, like, disappeared into this, like, fake reality world. Mm-hmm. And he's got a vendetta because the toy maker is the reason Montalban's in the chair. Which is, like, really fucking heavy.
It is.
And then you'll meet Sylvester Stallone, who is the bad guy. I fucking loved his character in this. And maybe it's because it's just, like, atypical Stallone. Like, you're so used to seeing Stallone in Rambo.
Yeah.
Or Rocky, or something, this kind of action hero, beat him up. In this, he's playing like five different people, and you can tell, like, everyone else in all of these movies, at least these first three, they are just having fucking fun with it. Like, this dude is playing like a warmongering version of himself, the toy maker character. He's playing like a hippie version, and I think he's playing like a nerd scientist version of, and it's like three distinct people and then the main person yelling at them. And it's just, he's playing this diabolical, like, hammed up spy villain. And him and Montalban's, like, weird ass chemistry at the end of this movie that by all rights, I don't feel like it needs to exist, but it does. And I'm totally here for it. They have like a showdown kind of type thing where they talk it out. And it just, like, I kind of wish that movie happened. Like, I would have loved to just see that movie. Like, whatever the fuck they're talking. Like, I want to see Sylvester Stallone and Ricardo Montalban as friends in a secret agent society that we have a falling out and they become enemies. Like, that sounds like a fucking movie. Like, damn. And it's almost a shame we don't get it. But a lot of the other characters, though, and this is kind of the sad thing, is like the other characters start to get kind of forgettable. Like, unlike in 2, where you have like Steve Buscemi, like, just really being like the scaredy cat, you know, scientist guy, and it works. I mean, he has such gems of lines as, like, the whole...
Do you think God stays in heaven because he, too, lives in fear of what he's created? Here on Earth? Stop looking at me like that. I'm no loon.
And it's just like, why the fuck is that in a kid's movie? Like, what the hell's going on here? But, you know, he says it, and, like, you remember this kind of stuff, because at the very least, it's campy as shit. In this movie, you remember Sylvester Stallone, sure, but, like, the friends, like, I constantly forget that Junie makes friends in the virtual world. And I'm like, like, I don't remember any of them. I mean, they're fine, they're not...
Yeah.
They all have, like, their reason they want to win the game, because they'll win the... money or whatever's on the final level is supposed to be like riches and glory or something. And I'm like, this is kind of nuts. Like, and of course, Junie's like, there's nothing there. And they're like, yeah, you're lying. And I'm like,
yeah, I feel so bad because these kids are poor.
Right. Well, like, that's their whole game.
Like,
Junie's
just like, I'm an agent. Like,
I'm retired. I'm fucking retired.
I know,
at
these
10.
Kids are like, oh, I'm just, you know, a nerd. Like,
well, they're like, one of them, I think, is like, yeah, I want to win because, like, I think he goes as far as his mom's sick or something.
Yeah.
I don't remember exactly what he says, but something where it's like he wants the money for his family.
Yeah.
Because, like, they're really poor. Yeah. And I'm just like, that's, wow, this this sucks because there is no money. There is no pot of gold at the end of this rainbow, dude. Like, you get trapped in the world forever. Again, it's very much like fucking Sword Art Online when they're like, get out. If you want to get the riches, like, get to the end of the thing and I'll release everybody. And then when they do in the show, spoiler alert for the first season of Sword Art Online, when they do get to the end, it's actually not like that at all. And the only reason they get out is kind of a fluke. But it's kind of like that. Like, the only reason, the one clever twist, though, in this was that in order to get out of the game, you have to release the Toymaker from this kind of virtual prison. And, like, I did kind of like that, because that was a little clever. Like, okay, you want to get these kids out? Then you have to let me go, too. Yeah. And it's sort of it was sort of given as, like, there's two ways you can do this. There's a way you can do it where he doesn't get out, and there's a way that you can do it where he does get out. And, in, like, Montalban and does it. And then
having to use the 3D glasses because, spoilers, it's 3D.
This movie. I can't believe we just, you know, we skirted over it because 3D was that flash in a pan, man. Like, this movie.
I remember those glasses.
I do too. The DVD at my mother's house has those glasses in it because the DVD was like, you could watch this movie in 3D. Not like a 3D movie, like they have like 3D TVs and shit. Like, literally, it was like red and blue and like offset. And they gave you like red and blue old timey 3D glasses that you wore and you watched the film. And it looks like shit. And it just does it. And that was the gag, was you get these cool glasses because they wear the cool glasses in the movie. And it was this whole fucking thing. And it just, you know, it looks like shit. Like, it's that blue and red. Looks like shit 3D. But, you know, watching it now, like, you don't have to watch it in 3D, so it's fine. But you can tell. It's kind of like movies like Journey to the Center of the Earth with Brendan Fraser, where they do the whole, look at this. Yeah. And their, like, hand goes at the camera holding an object. Like, you can tell this was supposed to be popping out at you. And they're doing kind of that bit. And this movie, oh my God, it does it so much.
Man, that was such a phase.
I know. And then it goes away and then comes back with Avatar. Yeah. And it's like, oh, geez, okay.
And then they're just like, we'll give you actual regular glasses instead of the red and blue.
Yeah, like, we figured out how to do this with like polarized lenses, and now we don't have to have the crappy red and blue where the colors don't make any sense anymore.
Yeah.
It's awful, and it works.
But yeah, Spy Kids. I mean, there's lots to unpack. There's lots to talk about. I'm sure we could spend hours and hours talking about it. But Amber, on this rewatch, you know, like, we both kind of seem like we grew up and really enjoyed these movies. How do you feel about them now? Like, if you had to put them, I guess let's, like, rate them in order. What's the best one of these three? You know, one, two, or three. And then what are you giving, like, what score are you throwing on each one out of 10?
Oh, it's definitely 1, 2, 3.
Okay.
And then I think it'd be like an 8, 7, 6.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Wow, that's a lot higher than I was expecting.
Really?
Yeah, no.
I think it's just because it's, like, from what I've seen from other ratings, it's a fine film.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it won awards, and it was nominated for many other awards. So I don't think there's anything, like, wrong with it. I think the whole thing was that people just know that he can do better, which, of course, he has.
Yeah,
like, just looking at the films now, like, he's done a whole lot better. And especially with, like, motion capturing, like, that was pretty cool. But, like, people want to see more of his works.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of like Del Toro. Like, you know, Del Toro started off, like, just known as this, like, monster movie guy.
Right, right.
Who does a lot of, like, prosthetics and things like that. But over time, like, because of all of that and the trial and error and everything,
mm-hmm.
he finally came to, like, his best film, which is probably, like, Shape of Water.
Yeah.
So I feel like that's how I kind of look at, like, his films. Like, yeah, the third Spy Kids wasn't great. But again, that was like fan service because the other two did so well.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I could get behind your order. I think it's definitely a 1, 2, 3 situation for me too. I think my ratings are a bit closer, but I think they're a little bit lower. Like, I think it's like 7, 7, 5.
Okay.
For me. Because it may be more like 6, 6, 5. It depends. But like, Spy Kids 1, like, on the rewatch, because it's been a while, I was like, wow, I was, like, really impressed with this movie. Mm-hmm. Like, I was like, wow, this is actually a lot more clever than I remember it being, especially as a kid. Like, I can watch this and not just feel like I'm watching something nonsensical. And I think you're right about, especially when it comes to, like, special effects, I feel like Robert Rodriguez really wasn't afraid to just do a shit ton of effects in this movie, mm-hmm. but it doesn't come off like some shitty spy or sci-fi like film like Sharknado or something like that, where they're just like, let's make CGI everything. It's like, you know, it kind of goes into that meta factor I was talking about, where it's like, I'm going to do it and you know I'm going to do it, but I'm going to do it like to 11.
Yeah.
I'm not just going to like make a shitty looking like suburban CGI model that like, you know, gets flipped over by a shark. I'm going to make a crazy looking fucking submarine that has to crash into a crazy looking castle filled with thumb men. Like, what the hell? Like, like, okay, fine. You know what? Fuck it. Because when you make it that absurd, I'm able to buy it more, even though it looks that fake, right? Because it's going to look fake. It's not going to look real. Mm-hmm. Thumb people? What the fuck is that supposed to look like? God, if that looked more real, I'd be terrified. Like, Jesus Christ. And then the second one, I think, is just a nice sequel. Like, it kind of keeps the momentum of the first one and does it the same with a little bit of twist, but I think it builds on it. It gets a little heavier, but it's like, you know, there. I still think the first one's like a kind of a fun spy movie in and of itself, like kid-like, sure. But the third one is just, I mean, you know, it can range from like a 5 to a 4, but it's just, it's not great. Like, I don't think it's very, it's not like it's stupid. It's not like it's, oh man, this is such dumb. Like, it shouldn't happen. It's just like, you can feel the momentum of the films kind of dying, and you can tell, I think the worst part is like, you could tell the actors are probably having more fun with it than the viewer. Like, me as the viewer, I'm not loving this movie as much as clearly everyone who's making it is, which is fine. I'm glad they had a good time, but you know, but yes, Spy Kids, a huge hit that is now 20 years old. And in a weird way, it seems like after 20 years, Robert Rodriguez is back with the whole kids doing some stuff that their parents are doing things. Amber, what are we, what am I talking about? What do we got going on next week?
Next week, we've got We Can Be Heroes, which is also directed and written by Robert Rodriguez.
That's right. We are going to be taking on the new Netflix film, We Can Be Heroes. It's like a weird pseudo-sequel to like Sharkboy and Lava Girl, if I'm not wrong. Is that something that's going on here? Yeah, it's... Essentially, it sounds, you know, from all the ads that we've been seeing, it sounds like it's maybe similar to Spy Kids, except with superheroes, but you know what? We'll see.
But superhero kids.
Superhero kids. So, you know, maybe there's a bit of a twist there, but you can hear more about what we think that movie will involve later. It looks like it has an all-star cast, though. Mandalorian himself is in that show, or in that movie. So, you know, looking forward to seeing that. But... until we continue our weird impromptu Rodriguez run of films, I am one of your hosts, Thomas.
I'm Amber.
And this is So What Happens Next, Small Screen.